Hello there, dear listeners. You know what? I'm too excited. We have to just jump right into it. Cue the music. I'm Kara DJ, and you're listening to Into a Larger World, the podcast.
That's good. You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Listeners, this is a big one. I'm so honored to be joined here today by Dan Madsen. He's a Star Wars fandom legend, previous fan club president, the producer of Star Wars Celebration 1, the founder and original editor of Star Wars Insider, Dams Denna, the Kadu handler in The Phantom Menace. The list goes on. Dan, thank you so much for being here to talk with me today.
Thank you, Kara. I'm happy to be here with you.
This is also a really big moment for the Into a Larger World project and podcast. The listeners know that from my constant referencing of it, that I've been deeply researching the first Star Wars Celebration with the goal of preserving the legacy of that first event. And everyone that I talked to was like, you really just have to talk to Dan. So I'm very happy to be here with you today.
Well, I'm just happy to be here with you. I love the work you're doing on this project. I think it's worthy and I'm happy to contribute to it for sure.
Amazing. Okay, so before we get to Celebration, let's start at the start of your Star Wars story. So when did you first encounter Star Wars?
I first encountered Star Wars when I was 14 years old and my cousin had gone to see it the week it had opened and he came over and said, oh my gosh, you have got to go see this movie. And just a little backstory to that, up to that point, I had been, and still am actually, a Star Trek fan. And I went to my very first Star Trek convention here in Denver, Colorado. And I picked up the program booklet that, you know, told what was happening at the convention. And on the very back page was an ad for this new movie called Star Wars. And it was opening in like 2 weeks. And I was like, Star Wars, what's that, I wonder? You know, I that was my first time I'd ever even heard of it. And I was curious. I thought, what is this? And so my cousin came over and said, you have got to come see this movie with me. So that evening, he took me and we both went to go see Star Wars at our nicest theater in Denver, big, giant, massive screen. And, you know, like most people, Kara, I was absolutely and utterly blown away. I mean, just from the beginning of that Star Destroyer flying over your head, I was enamored with the whole film. And that was what got me started in my passion for Star Wars. I literally came home and went out and then over the weeks and months purchased every poster I could find and every model kit I could build and every magazine that had Star Wars in it. And I started collecting Star Wars and my room was covered in Star Wars. And it was my absolute passion.
And going back to Star Trek, you're huge part of Star Trek fan history as well. And I was wondering, I'm a fanzine editor myself, so fanzines are so important in my life. And I know that you had a Star Trek fanzine at one point, right?
I did. I started after Star Trek the Motion Picture came out, I started a little newsletter. And it just started kind of growing and growing and growing. And the next thing, and I got more professional as I started getting a little older. Out of the blue, I get a cease and desist letter from Paramount Studios telling me to, you know, hey, you know, you're not doing this with a license. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm just a kid doing this in my mom and dad's basement. And they said, well, you know, you have the right amount of professionalism mixed with the right amount of fanaticism. And we've been thinking about doing an official Star Trek fan club. And so they asked me if I'd like to fly out to Paramount Studios and meet with them. And of course I was, you know, had butterflies in my stomach. I was nervous, but I said, absolutely. And I should just preface this by the fact that I had been sending my newsletter to Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry for many, many, many months. And he loved what I was doing. And he and I would correspond and write back and forth. And he would tell me how much he enjoyed the magazine. So when I came out to the studio to do my to have my meeting, Gene came and said, this is the guy. This is who I want. We need to have him do the official Star Trek fan club. And lo and behold, Kara, I mean, it was, I don't know how many, a month, 2 months later, I get this huge contract in the mail to become the official Star Trek fan club. And I went through it as thoroughly as I could, and I signed it. And that was how the story began. And it just, over the years, it grew and grew and grew. And it went from myself and two friends that were helping me with it up to, you know, after I had brought Star Wars, the Star Wars license on board, we had over 100 employees at the peak during the time period of Episode One when it got released. So, yeah, it went literally from a labor of love out of my parents' basement to a full-fledged business that was making millions and had 100 employees working on both of these fan clubs.
That's incredible. And I love the marriage in your story of Star Trek and Star Wars is so great. Cause you know, obviously historically that's, I don't actually think that Star Wars fans dislike Star Trek fans or vice versa. I feel like that's kind of a myth, but
it is,
you know, cause I feel like almost all of us like both. So,
well, you know, it's funny because back in the day when I was doing the official fan clubs for both, and we were kind of like, you know, Star Trek and Star Wars Central. There were a lot of people, a lot of writers and journalists that would do articles on us all around the country. And I always, it seemed like, you know, at least 90% of the time, they'd always say, okay, so which do you like best, Star Trek or Star Wars? And I would always say, I love them both, that they're both very different. You know, one complements the other. There's no reason why you can't love both. And so, but yeah, the, you know, writers and producers and people, they always like to play up the, you know, Star Trek versus Star Wars. And but I loved them both, and I never gave up on either one of them.
Definitely. Yeah. And as do I, and as do like so many of my friends. So it's, I think they are like so different, but so 1986 was when Fantastic Media was founded, right?
That's right. That's right. That's when I started. We came up with a corporate name because we were doing Star Trek, Star Wars, Back to the Future. And I did Lord of the Rings, but that was much later, on in the thing. But, yeah, so we said, you know, well, we need a corporate name here for all of these ventures that we're involved with. And that's when the name came about. And we really, to be honest, that's when we really became a much more professional organization.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I saw, correct me if I'm wrong, but because they reached out to you to start the Lucasfilm fan club. At the time, it started as Lucasfilm fan club, and then it switched a little later back to Star Wars, right?
That is absolutely correct. They had started the original Star Wars fan club back in, you know, shortly, I think 78, right after really Star Wars came out and, you know, this huge fan movement for it. And the funny thing is that, you know, I had to have been at least one of the first 1,000 people to join that fan club, because minute I saw the very first ad for that, I joined the fan club and I got all the neat and cool things that they came with that. So years later, in about 1986, when I had the opportunity to give the fan club a rebirth, you know, and I originally went out in Lucasfilm and sat down and talked to them, and they said, you know, Star Wars, we don't know when George is going to get back to it, but we do have two projects in the works. We have Willow and we have Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. And so they said, I think we should call the fan club the Lucasfilm fan club so that we can cover all the things that Lucasfilm is doing. And, you know, you can throw something Star Wars in every issue, of course, for the Star Wars fans. But this way, you know, you have something current of what we're actually doing. And I agreed with that. I said, it's let's go that route. And so, yeah, we started it in 87. The very first thing I ever promoted it at was Starlog did a 10th anniversary Star Wars convention out in Los Angeles. Yes. And it was the one time, and I got a picture of it, that George Lucas met Gene Roddenberry. So that was, we had a table and we were promoting the fan club and saying, hey, it's back, but we're more than just Star Wars now. And that was the very first time I ever promoted out to the public. And then we advertised in Starlog magazine and a lot of other places. Without Star Trek, I wouldn't have had Star Wars, because they were so impressed with what we were doing with Star Trek,
right,
that they said, we closed the fan club down, and they had no desire to relaunch it, to be honest. But when they saw what we were doing, they said, maybe we should just not do it in-house and let Dan and his crew do it, because they do a great job with Star Trek. And when they found out that I was a massive Star Wars fan, that made it even more opportune. And so, yeah, and what's interesting, Kara, is that how it's one scratches the back of the other, because mm-hmm. when I joined the official Star Wars fan club, I thought to myself, well, how come Star Trek doesn't have a really excellent official fan club like this, And I kept thinking Star Trek needs to have something like this. Well, lo and behold, that's what I eventually went on to do, was start the official Star Trek fan club and kind of pattern it a little bit after what Star Wars was doing. And then lo and behold, here years later, the Star Wars fan club has dropped in my lap. So it's all kind of, there's a kind of a synergy, a serendipity to the whole thing.
Definitely. And I was dying to ask about that first, the 1987 Starlog event.
Yes.
Because I know that's like colloquially referred to as Celebration Zero.
Yes, it is. And then technically it is.
Right. Like, it was the first official event, Lucasfilm sanctioned event.
That's before. Correct.
Yeah.
Yep,
and
that's
there
right.
And that was when, the fan club launched?
Yes.
The Lucasfilm
that,
fan
well,
club?
Well, yes, the Lucasfilm fan club. It launched shortly after that. That's okay. When we advertised it for the first time to anyone that knew about it. So, yeah, we had a table there. We had flyers. We showed, I was there behind the table and saying what it was going to be all about and why we were calling it now Lucasfilm. And the reaction was really enthusiastic. People were really excited that it was coming back, because they were really bummed when Lucasfilm closed the fan club down, because they felt like there was still so much to be said and told about Star Wars. And it was kind of, in a lot of fans' minds, they thought, well, if Lucasfilm is closing the fan club down, there must not going to be any more new Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of, thought, well, okay, we got three movies and that's that. Little did they know what's happened with Star Wars now all the way up to 2023 is, I don't think any fan could have dreamed that it would be what it is today. Let's put it that way.
I don't think George could have even imagined that it would still be going the way it is.
Yeah, no, I don't even think George had the vision of that.
Exactly. So the first changes came in 1994. That was when Shadows of the Empire was the thing that kind of boosted it back to be the Star Wars fan club. And then the magazine changed to our beloved Star Wars Insider.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah. So at that time, did you know that the special editions were coming? I think the Whispers came in 1994, or was it like a little later?
No, we knew. We knew in advance that the special editions were coming. So we absolutely said, this is the time now to get back into calling it the Star Wars, the official Star Wars fan club, because we had the special editions coming out that we knew about. And then I was being given some inside information that George was actually going to start working on the screenplay for episode one, and that they were looking at 1999 And so, you know, that wasn't public information yet, but I was given some inside information so that I knew that, okay, so now's the time that we switch it back to Star Wars, because as the years go forward here, we're going to really, really be talking about Star Wars a lot.
Yes. Okay. And then as, I mean, I don't know if it's like, if you can talk about like what it was like to separate, because once you're working for Lucasfilm and you're making the fan club and you're working with Insider, do you still feel the fanness of it, you know, like, or does it become like you have to kind of separate it? Like when you heard that there was going to be episode one, what did like your fan brain feel?
I've always been a fan. You know, at some point you have to separate a bit of your fan side, because you also have to have a business to run. And if the business doesn't run successfully, then you can't, the fan part can't happen. So, while I kept a professional side of me that kept the business going and doing these new ventures, but the fan side of me is screaming inside, you know, and I was just, you know, I was elated, and I kept thinking to myself too, Kara, that, you know, when I started the relaunch of the fan club, I kept thinking, well, you know, I can trudge along here for several years with, you know, Willow and Indiana Jones and whatever else, you know, Lucasfilm's doing. But I thought, you know, it's like me in a gold mine. I'm picking away at the rock, and I keep thinking to myself, I know there's gold somewhere behind these rocks. And I just pounding away. And eventually, lo and behold, boom, there was a vein of gold behind that. And that's what I knew. I knew that there was, Star Wars was coming. It might take a while. It might be years before it comes out. And hopefully I'll live long enough to see it. But I knew that Star Wars was coming. And I thought, boy, when that hits, you know, watch out, you know, close the doors, because it's going to get crazy. And
exactly.
And it did. Boy, let me tell you.
And it did. I was going to say.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I mean, we advertised the fan club on the backs of every piece of episode one merchandise. And we had advertisements in all of the fast food joints, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken and Taco Bell and all those that were tied into episode one, and Pizza Hut. And yeah. And I mean, it just went absolutely bonkers. And as a result of that, we had the largest membership the fan club had ever had, even from its very beginning. We had over 180,000 fan club members.
Oh my God.
And the Star Wars Insider, in addition to being given to the fan club members, was also now going to be on the newsstand. So between newsstand and fan club membership, we were putting out over 500,000 copies of the Star Wars Insider.
Oh my God.
And I don't think it's ever, and it probably will never again reach that level. That was a very, very special time for Star Wars. And I've commented before, I've said, you know, that period of time as we were moving towards episode one opening, the excitement and the buzz of everybody now knowing, oh my gosh, you know, there's another new Star Wars movie, finally. And, you know, the tidbits we'd release through the Insider, because the internet had not really come into focus at that point. So, I mean, I think it was the most exciting time to be a Star Wars fan. And even more so than, you know, today, when you've got all these different Disney Plus shows. The excitement during that period of time and that year, 2 years, moving up to episode one, I've never felt nor seen anything like it. And I don't think we ever will again.
I don't think so either. The more that I read about it and talk to other people about that time, I think that was like definitely a lightning in the bottle moment.
It really was. And, you know, regardless of whether you liked episode one or hated it,
sure,
or were like, meh, you know, in between, still, because nobody had seen the movie yet. They only saw clips. And this is where, you know, Celebration comes into the whole story. But they'd only seen clips and pictures in the Insider magazine. And, you know, they were hearing rumors and things about what was happening. And that was just magical. I mean, you know, there was just, it almost, because I think a lot of fans had started to think you know, oh, well, we're not going to get any new Star Wars movies. We're just going to have to accept that. So the fact that they knew they were getting not only one, but three new ones, I think it just, you know, it was like Christmas morning every year, exactly. You know, waiting for that to happen. And it just, the buzz was just phenomenal. I've never experienced anything in my life quite like that 2 years to 1 year prior to episode one opening.
Definitely. And even going back a little bit before that, I want to make sure I don't miss this.
Sure.
You, and I'm not sure which year this happened. I'm assuming it was probably in 96 or 97, but you have a cameo in The Phantom Menace.
Yes, I sure do. Well, I was invited over to the set at Elstree Studios, or Leavesden Studios, actually, not Elstree, Leavesden Studios mm-hmm. in England, and to spend a week over there to interview all of the cast members and behind the scenes. So essentially, you know, they were all in one place at one time so that I didn't have to track right. them down over the years. You know, we could go there and I could get everybody, you know, done and have a library of interviews that I could then utilize as each issue came out. And so they offered to give me a cameo in the movie, and I flew over and along with a couple of other people that were also given cameos, like my editor and such. And they fitted me for a costume, and I was to be a Naboo citizen. I had the whole costume put on and fitted for it. And then, I was given the cameo of being able to run out there and grab the reins of this creature that I had no idea of what it looked like at the time. And that whole parade scene where you see the Gungans come marching down the road there, the street, you know, that was all a bunch of guys in white jumpsuits. You know, there was no Gungans actually there. That was to be added later. Right. And so I had no idea what it was I was supposed to be running out there and grabbing. And I think it was the assistant director said, well, imagine a cross between a dinosaur and a chicken, and that's what you're doing. Okay, so I did the best I could. And it turns out, you know, that the Kedu does look kind of like a dinosaur slash chicken. So I got my cameo and I ran out there to do my thing and grab the reins of it. And I did that for several days. And then when I was about to go home, they said, you know, we have to do more pickup shots because George didn't get everything he wanted. And we have to wait for the weather to get back to what it was that day because this was all shot outside. And so we need you to stay another week. And I'm like, okay, you know, no problem. Sure, and, you know, it was not? So memorable while I was there, Kara. It was the exact time while I was there doing that was the exact same time that Princess Diana was killed. There in London and see the newspapers and watch the mourning that was going on there. And then I was there when the funeral happened and I stood there and watched, you know, Prince Charles and the kids and the whole, you know, funeral march go down the street. And I thought, man, you know, I'm really here at a historic time in the world. And, so, you know, I had to stay an extra week and do a couple of extra pickup shots for that scene that I'm in. And, it wasn't until much later that the character I had as a cameo was actually given a name, Dams Dena, which is kind of a mix-up of the my name, and he was put on a collectible, customizable trading card game card, and yes. And so the name was given Dams Dena, and so now that's an official character in the Star Wars universe.
Well, you never know, like the way that the novels work and the short stories work and the comics work, maybe Dams Dena will appear. You never know. Again,
I keep waiting for my cameo in one of the series, but nobody's called me yet.
That's so, it's just really cool that I have someone on my podcast right now who is technically in Star Wars. I'm going to milk that.
My friends tease me all the time. They said, hey, yeah, have you heard the new Star Wars series? It's called Star Wars, Dams Dena. And I'm like, yeah, well, okay, yeah, no.
I'd watch it.
I can make anything interesting if they try.
Exactly. So we're like leading up to or just experiencing the special editions, and it was late in 1997 that Lucasfilm approached you about possibly planning a fan event.
That is correct. And you know, what's funny is that at the time, Steve Sansweet was the director of fan relations at Lucasfilm.
Yes.
And he was the one that called me. And it's funny because we had been talking about within, you know, the people within my company, we were saying, you know, wouldn't it be cool to do a fan event, you know, right before episode one comes out, you know, to kind of, you know, really give back to the fans. And so we had already been talking about it when Steve called and said they had been talking about it and said they really, you know, wanted this convention to be done by the fan club. They felt that was the most appropriate. And so he invited me out to Skywalker Ranch, and I brought four or five of my top people that were that would be helping me put it on. And we went out and sat down around the table there, and we pitched around ideas and thoughts of what should it be like, what could it be, you know, would we bring props and costumes, and who would be the guests, and where, and then the big question was, well, where should it be? And so, you know, everybody was throwing around everything from Los Angeles to Chicago to, you know, and I said, well, you know, since I'm the one that's got this resting on my shoulders to make it happen, I said, you know, Denver would be the best place for me because not only is it centrally located in the country, in Colorado, but, you know, for me to be able to pull volunteers that could help work the convention. I mean, you know, we're going to need hundreds of volunteers to help us do this thing. I said, you know, I already have a base of fans I know that run the local conventions that I could pull and have them help us do Star Wars Celebration 1. And so we kind of went back and forth, and then they said, you know what, that's not a bad idea, but where could it be held? And I said, well, you know, we'd be looking at the Colorado Convention Center is huge. And I said, it would work great. But the dates that Lucasfilm wanted to do it, the specific dates, they were very adamant that they wanted it done on these dates. Unfortunately, the Colorado Convention Center was booked at that time.
Because you were really only like in full preparation for like barely a year, right?
Not even that. I mean, and I'd never run a convention before. This is my first time I'd ever done one. So, you know, I'd been to a lot of them, but I'd never actually run one. And so I was, you know, I kept thinking to myself, wow, you know, I'm going to need some help here. And so I went around to all the big places that could potentially be held. And we found the Wings of the Rockies Air and Space Museum. And it has a bunch of vintage aircraft and stuff in a big giant hangar that was on the former Air Force Base at Lowry, which is in Denver here. And so Jim Ward, who was then the head of marketing at Lucasfilm, flew out so he could tour it with me. And we walked around, we looked at everything, and I said, you know, so you got a jet fighter here, but imagine if we have a life-size X-Wing fighter standing next to it. And he says, oh, that would be cool. And so we looked at the space, and it had plenty of room to do all kinds of things. You know, it's a huge hangar. I mean, a massive hangar. And so, you know, at the end of the day, it had to go past George. George said, let's do it. And we decided that was where it was going
to
be.
Great. And I've read, it's hard to find a lot of like first person accounts online, but I've dug like as deep as you can go. And sure. I know I read that there were like crazy rumors that George was going to be there, but was that ever like I'm guessing that was probably never in the plan.
You have no idea how hard I pushed to have George there.
Yeah.
I kept saying, we need George. We need George. George needs to be there. And they're like, well, I don't know if George is going to actually be there or not. And I said, oh my gosh, we have to have George. And so for many, many months, I kept wanting to, you know, push them to see if George could come. Unfortunately, George couldn't come. He was still working on the film, believe it or not. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we couldn't get George. And so the discussion was held, you know, we had Rick McCallum there, who's, you know, his right-hand man. And then, you know, they said, well, I kept saying, well, who could we get guests from all across the Star Wars universe? They said, no, let's just focus on episode one. We're going to have primarily the guests. We're going to primarily actors and production people that are involved in episode one. And fortunately, you know, both Anthony Daniels and Warwick Davis were both in episode one. So we brought them forward, you know, to be in there. And so, you know, it was, I tried as hard as I could to get George there. But, you know, the second best thing is George filmed a welcome to celebration video that at the opening ceremonies, we put it up there on the big screen and had George welcoming. He was at Leavesden Studios and he was welcoming everybody to the first Star Wars celebration.
Side note, and maybe you, I don't know if this, but I'm just dying to know, does that video exist anywhere? Do you know?
You know, I don't know if it exists, but it should. Somebody, probably in the Lucasfilm vaults, they probably have that somewhere.
One of my friends took a picture of the screen and I have, so I have that, but I'm just dying to see it someday. But
yeah, I'm sure it does exist somewhere, but it would be at Lucasfilm and where, you know, one of the archivists there maybe knows where it might be.
Well, hopefully it's preserved somewhere.
I hope so. I hope so. Cause that's a little piece of Star Wars history.
Truly. And the event was announced to like the fan public. As far as I could tell, it looked like December of 1998. Does that sound right?
Yes. Yes. And the very first time it was advertised was in the Star Wars Insider. It was the very first place, and we were giving people the opportunity to get tickets early. And that's where we announced it, was in Star Wars Insider. And then, you know, we, from there, it went out to all the other outlets, and we, I think, done ads in Starlog and other sci-fi magazines and such. But originally, the first announcement and ad were in the Star Wars Insider.
Yes. And then as far as I could tell, it looked like tickets went on sale in January of 99.
Yes, that is correct. Yep.
Okay, cool. That's so, and I saw that they could either get them through mail or eventually through mosespa.com.
That's right.
Or by fax, which is so cool.
Yeah, it was a different time and place than today.
Right. And then, of course, 1-800-TRUE-FAN, which is legendary.
Yep. That's absolutely right. Yep. That's a funny story, too, because 1-800-TRUE-FAN, you know, we had to have an 800 number that would both, for both Star Wars and Star Trek, and we can't say Star Wars and Star Trek. You know, we needed one number, so, you know, True Fan was the number you call, and then when you called that number, it'd say, you know, if you're trying to find the Star Wars family, press 1. Star Trek Fan Club, press 2. And depending on which one you went to, there was a whole really cool little audio thing we made of people that could listen to different music and clips from the movies and things while they're waiting on the line. And so in our phone messaging bank there, we had probably, I think we had about 25 people manning the phones to take orders for, you know, merchandise as well as Star Wars Celebration. And when Anthony Daniels came out 2 weeks prior to Celebration 1, he was so good. He went back into the phone area and everybody that was on the phones got to meet him, you know, and such. And then he surprised one fan who called in to place an order, and he was there and he took their order. And he was like, thank you for calling the official Star Wars Fan Club. This is Anthony. How may I help you? And, you know, they at first didn't even know. And they he finally said, well, this is Anthony Daniels. They're like, no, it's not. And he's like, yes, it is. And so we had everybody sitting around laughing and watching that because this one lucky fan got Anthony Daniels to take their order.
That is so much fun. And I loved reading that because I read that in an interview with you that Anthony came out like 2 weeks before. And I just love knowing that he was so involved with Celebration One because he's been such a staple at Celebration ever since. So it's just so cool to know that he was at the root of the event as well.
He was. We couldn't have done it without him. I mean, not only did he work to coordinate the whole stage and the lighting and the sound system, you know, for the main stage where everything would happen. But, you know, I run by him everything, you know, from marketing and advertising to, you know, getting the guest that would be coming. He and Lynn Hale, who just retired from Lucasfilm last year, were the two key individuals. And I can't forget to add Steve Sansweet as well. Steve was integral to it as well. But yeah, Anthony was my right-hand man. I don't know that I could have been done without him.
That's so cool. And I've read so many accounts of people saying that, like, yeah, we were waiting in line and Anthony Daniels came out and talked to us and it was so cool. So that's just really, that's such a precious little thing for Celebration One.
It really was, because as you're all aware, I'm sure you're aware of the rain and the mud that
yes,
haunted
we'll get
us.
To that.
Yes. He obviously went down the line of people standing in the rain and with an umbrella and talked to each and every one of them. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, he is, he's my hero.
It's so cool. It's really wonderful. And one question before we get to the actual weekend and,
sure.
the time surrounding it, was it always intended to become like an annual event or, I mean, it's still not annual except
no,
for sometimes
no.
what it is,
but more
was
than
it
one.
Was it intended to go? Because I know Celebration 2 and 3 kind of paired with Episodes 2 and 3. Was it intended that way or were you just kind of doing it?
No, it was just intended as a one shot. I mean,
sure.
I think they thought if it's really successful that, you know, eventually maybe we'd do another for episode 2 or 3. But no, I mean, it was discussed as just the one time only convention because it was a lot of work, not only a lot of work for me and my company, but a lot of work for Lucasfilm, too. And it at that time, there was no discussion of, you know, well, let's do one of these every year or one every 2 years or anything. It was the focus was just on a one-time event, and
right.
That's the way it was planned out.
Definitely. Okay, so now we're in April of 1999, and I know you've talked about this a lot, but I think it is something that people forget. 10 days before Celebration was intended to begin, there was the Columbine tragedy in Colorado.
Yeah,
and I know that it was like. You've said it was like a fairly instant decision that you weren't going to do it. So how did that all kind of happen?
That was a really heart-wrenching time here to be in Denver.
Yeah.
It's funny because Anthony and I had finished working at the office and we had gone to his hotel and we're in the bar having a drink, talking, and all this, and they had TVs up in the bar, you know? And all of a sudden over the TV comes these stories, you know, oh my God, you know, shooting happening at Columbine High School and, you know, how many kids have been killed. And we're both looking at each other like, oh my God, you know, that was really kind of, it wasn't an everyday occurrence like it is now. That was really
exactly.
shocking. Not yeah. that today's aren't, but you know, it wasn't something that had happened really before. And so we were like, you know, in awe of like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And so I left Anthony and went home and we came back the next day to my office and we were sitting there and I got a call from the head of licensing at Lucasfilm along with the head of marketing. And they said, Dan, we've been watching the news and they said, we really think that we need to cancel Celebration. It's just... It's such a horrible thing to happen that nobody in Denver is going to feel like celebrating. And
right.
Anthony and I sat there kind of looking stunned at each other because, I mean, we had – everything was really planned at that point. You know, people from all over the world already booked their airfare and their hotels and, you know, there were plans to come. And I just looked at Anthony and I said, oh, my God. I said, you know, we've got so much invested and so much time and energy and – people have already booked everything to come. And I said, we can't let this happen. I said, you know, if there's one thing this city needs more than anything is a shot in the arm of positivity, something that is happiness that from this gloom of these monsters and what they did at this high school. And then we come to find out that one of the kids that was killed was a huge Star Wars fan and he had already bought tickets and planned to be at Celebration One. I mean, I thought, we can't stop this now. We have to do this thing. And so Anthony and I literally went to work on trying to get the mayor of Denver to send a fax to Lucasfilm saying, hey, we need this thing to continue. We can't have this get canceled, and Denver needs this shot in the arm right now. We need something positive and good here in the city. And so when we got back on the phone with Lucasfilm the next day, Anthony and I, they said, okay, we'll agree to let this go forward, but we want to do something for the memory of these kids that have been killed. And so they wanted to do these ribbons that we'd give out to everybody that came to the convention that they could wear in memory of this horrible, tragic event. And then I was planned to come out at the beginning and introduce everybody to Celebration. And I said, well, let's do a moment of silence for those that were killed. And they said, absolutely perfect. So that's how we made it happen. But it was one inch away from being canceled.
It's incredible. And I know I've read a couple different totals, but I know that there was like tens of thousands of dollars were raised, right?
Oh yeah. No, I think we raised something like 20,000-30,000 now.
Yeah.
For the Columbine victims. So yeah. And you know, what's interesting is that at that time, because there was such sensitivity, that everyone who came in costume, they forbid them to come in carrying weapons, you know,
right,
fake blasters, fake whatever, you know, they couldn't have the weapons, because of the sensitivity of what was happening right then, you know? So yeah, if you were a stormtrooper, you had to leave your guns at the door.
Yeah. That's such a like intense time for the event to happen, but it kind of is that like ray of hope, which is all that one of the main things about Star Wars is hope. So
absolutely. And that's what we tried to, you know, that's what we eventually convinced Lucasfilm about. And, you know, it's what made, the event even that much more special, because we, you know, people refused to let the monsters that committed that crime to dampen the enjoyment and the fun and the positive nature of Celebration. We're not about to let those guys do that to the city of Denver on top of what they did. So it was important to me that we carried it forward.
And thank goodness you did, obviously.
I mean, it was there was touch and go there for those 2 days. Yeah. I mean, I was sick to my stomach. I didn't sleep at all that night when we were going to get up and have more discussions with them, because I thought, geez, you know, we're looking at the real fact that this is going to be canceled. And it killed me to think about it.
After all that work, it's like,
No, that was a big part of it. But also the fact that how many fans we were going to be disappointing who had been looking forward to this and had made their plans, and then to have to come out and say to everybody, you know what, guess what, it's been canceled now. The nightmare of that it kept me up all night thinking about it.
Well, it did happen, and that first day it was raining a lot.
Yeah, it's not it was like, it wasn't bad enough that we had to deal with the whole Columbine thing, but then, you know, as we kept getting closer and closer, and I was looking at the weather forecast, I kept, you know, thinking, oh my God, because, you know, we tried to get the convention center, but it was important to Lucasfilm to have the event on the weekend they wanted it. So,
and who could have known? No, literally no one could have known. It was like a freak amount of rain too. It wasn't just it's rainy today. It was like a special kind of rain.
It was the worst rain in 100 years that we had in Denver on the same weekend we held that. And we, you know, because we couldn't fit everything into that big hangar, we built these two giant circus tents outside in the parking lot where stage one and stage two would be held. And when I rented these from the person that put these on, and they did all of this stuff for when Pope John Paul came to Denver to meet with President Clinton. They managed all the tents and the work that was done at that event. So I said, well, if it's good enough for the president and the Pope, it's good enough for us.
Right.
And they said, you know, they're rainproof, blah, 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 you know, everything's fine. And so we set these massive tents up, which are more like temporary buildings, and that's where the stages were all set up. And of course, you know, the morning I woke up for the first day of the celebration, you know, it was just gloom and doom. I mean, it was just pouring rain, not just a little light rain. It was pouring. And oh, I thought, God, you know, why on this weekend? You know, the weekend before it was gorgeous, absolutely beautiful, sunny, nice. And I might add, the weekend after celebration, it was sunny and nice. It was just that weekend. And so, you know, what we found out is that because of the amount of rain we got that weekend, these tents were designed to hold up, you know, from a normal rain, not a 100-year rain. And so there were puddles of water kind of inside the tents, and that created a lot of stress. And I don't know, you know, it's still to this day, Kara, it's amazing to me that we made it all happen, because it's we had so many obstacles against us that it really truly is a miracle that it actually came off and happened as good as it did.
Well, I will say, like, what I've read and heard from people who were there is, like, even despite that crazy rain, it was just so exciting for them to be at this really special brand new kind of event, celebrating this movie that was just like blowing everyone's minds. It wasn't even out yet. And like that sense of community and fandom community was already present, which is such a mainstay of celebration today. But that even despite the rain and everything, like people were just so excited to be there.
They were. And the weather did not dampen their enthusiasm. They still stood out there. And they laughed and they talked and they had, you know, they talked Star Wars, and it really did not dampen their enthusiasm. And I still remember on the second day when it was raining cats and dogs again, I was backstage with Rick McCallum, and I said, "Oh my God, Rick," I said, "I cannot believe that we're having this kind of weather on this weekend." He says, "You know what?" He says, "I wouldn't trade it for anything." He says, "This is going to make this event stand out and be even more special." He said, "This is going to be like their Star Wars Woodstock." And he says, 30 years from now, people are going to go, "Hey, I survived Star Wars Woodstock, you know, and the rain and the mud at the first celebration. And it'll be like a little badge of honor kind of thing." So, and it's funny because, you know, I do occasionally get people that comment about it that say, you know, "Oh my God, that was one of the worst weekends ever," you know, and and "Oh, I remember slogging through the mud." But most of the comments I get to this day are people like, "Oh, that was so fun. It was so amazing. You know, I really enjoyed it." And so, yeah, it's more positive than negative now.
Totally. It just adds to the legend, really.
It does. 'Cause it's, you know, it was a unique event. You had to be there to experience it.
So during the convention, during all the 3 days, where were you? Were you just kind of running around everywhere, or did you mostly stay backstage, like at the panels, or what was your like general routine?
I was everywhere. Was going from one. I had, you know, we had a walkie talkies, and I was putting out fires left and right, and I was everywhere. Backstage, I was in the dealer's area. I was at, you know, at one point in this Lowry Air Force Base, there was a charter school that was just half a block down from the celebration, and their parking lot was private, and they didn't want anybody parking there. Well, lo and behold, the parking was starting to get overcrowded, so people were parking in there. So I get a call from them saying, "Hey, we're gonna call the city. We're gonna shut you down. The people are." So I had to go down there in the middle of everything else that's going on and sit down with the heads of that school and say, "Please, let me tell you what's going on," because they were getting upset because, you know, some of the Star Wars fans weren't being too friendly about, you know, "Hey, we're parking here whether you like it or not." And right. So I had to put that fire out so that they didn't try to create issues for us. But literally, you know, I was working directly with Lynn Hale, Lucasfilm PR. I was going from the stage to the dealer's area to the area where all of the props and the models and the costumes were on display to ensure that they were safe and secure in their cabinets that we had on display for them. And I mean, we, you know, when Lucasfilm decided to bring out some of the stuff from the archives, you know, actual models and costumes and props and things. They told me you have to supply the display case. Well, I didn't have display cases like that for those things. So I had to go out and buy like 20 different display cases just so we could put those items and props in there. And then I had to have, you know, 24-hour security around them to ensure nobody broke them and stole them. And so,
I've seen a lot of good pictures of those.
We had the actual 3PO, you know, without his gold plating on, standing there in one of the cases, and you know, and some of the ships that were there. And then we had the Lucasfilm sent out costume characters. So we had, you know, Darth Vader and Stormtroopers wandering through the celebration saying hi to everybody. And
because that was going to be one of my questions, was because I know that the 501st was founded in 1997. Do you know if they were there?
They weren't. They were there, but they weren't there in any sort of
like official capacity.
Any kind of official capacity. It were just, you know, people in costumes that were there, and they were part of the 501st. But no, right. Lucasfilm had costume people sent out directly from them.
Oh, wow.
Wearing costumes that I don't think they were actually used in the movies, but I don't know. The Darth Vader looked pretty doggone convincing. and when he's talked, he had the voice of James Earl Jones. He would mimic that voice. So he was somebody they had do personal appearances at other things. So he was pretty impressive.
Okay, so that makes sense, because it was still early in the life of the 501st. So
that makes sense. Yeah, there was no official capacity of the 501st there.
Okay, got it. Okay, and my next question is, this is like one of my favorite elements of Celebration 1, which is the Jar Jar Jam. I just want to know. It was the special event on Saturday evening, and it just sounds like it was really fun. Were you there for that?
Oh, yes. I had to go over there and help coordinate, make sure everything was going all right for that as well. And we found a Jewish synagogue downtown Denver, and we had to have buses that we would bus everybody from the celebration down to the Jar Jar Jam so that they could go to that. And of course, we had, you know, Ahmed Best was there to do the rap and jamming with his band, you know, up on stage, and Ray Park got up there and did some rapping with Ahmed. I can't remember how many people we had. I mean, it was packed. It was sold out, let's put it that way. But it was a unique event because it, you know, there's people in Star Wars costumes, and they're in this Jewish synagogue, you know, auditorium, and they're jamming to Ahmed Best on stage. And so I was running from one spot to the other to ensure that the green room was good, that the food was there for any of the celebrities that wanted to come and experience the Jar Jar Jam, and then making sure that security was in place and everything. So yeah, that was a really fun event. It was really kind of quirky. I mean, it's not something you probably see today happen. But it was really a fun event, and it came off, you know, fabulously.
It's very much like a time capsule of that moment in time. Like, I don't think you would be able to do anything like that now on that size. It would have to be so much larger.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was a moment in time.
That's so cool. And obviously Ahmed Best, he was in Stomp off Broadway, and he's like an incredible musician. So I'm sure the music was probably really good too.
It was. And you know, it's funny because I was at Star Wars Celebration Chicago just a few years ago. Yes. And Ahmed was there, and they were doing a tribute to the 20th anniversary of Star Wars Celebration. And I was there in the front row and was there being interviewed on stage and such. At any rate, backstage, Ahmed saw me and came up and gave me a big hug. He says, "Man, I haven't seen you since 1999. I said, "I know." I said, "I don't know how we survived that, Ahmed." So we sat there and chatted and kind of reminisced about all the good memories we had of the Jar Jar Jam.
That's so cool. That's amazing. And then, okay, so Sunday, the last day of celebration, there was finally some sunshine. So what was the last day like? I know I've heard from one of my friends that Warwick did a panel like out on a flatbed truck or something. Like,
yeah, I mean, you
it
know,
that's like really cool.
It, thank God, you know, when I woke up that morning and there was sun and blue sky, I thought, oh, thank you, Lord, thank you. Because I was so hoping that at least we'd have one good day of weather. And it was a good day, although, you know, there were puddles of water everywhere. And out in the parking area, which was not paved, it turned into mud. So, you know, I mean, it was still an awkward situation, but at least we didn't have pouring rain coming down on the heads of everybody outside. And, but yeah, it was our one day of good weather. And I still, to this day, I still scratch my head. It's like, okay, so the weekend before celebration, absolutely beautiful, gorgeous, sunny, you know, blue sky day. The weekend after celebration, the same way, but no. The weekend we held celebration had to rain like cats and dogs the whole doggone time.
Oh, it figures, you know.
But yeah, it was the last day was a decent good weather day. So I'm at least thankful for that.
And then what was the, like, how did you feel in the aftermath? I mean, I'm sure exhausted, but beyond that, what did it feel like after the event was done?
Well, I was exhausted. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so were everybody that was on my team, both the employees that worked for me, but as well as the volunteers. But, yeah, you know, afterwards I knew we had succeeded because Gordon Radley then, who was the president of Lucasfilm, literally the second man underneath George Lucas, he had come out and on, I think it was Sunday, he had flown out and walked through the whole thing and saw what was going on. At any rate, I got in the mail the next day after that, or through FedEx, I got a big bottle of champagne that had a note on it that said, "Congratulations, great job on Star Wars Celebration." And I felt good about that. And and they sent me, eventually, ILM made me a really cool little model of a pit droid. And it was in a little, you know, glass case, and it was thanking me for putting on Star Wars Celebration 1. That now is in Steve Sansweet's Rancho Obi-Wan Museum.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And, yeah, you know, I felt like, you know, we did the best we could, you know, we put together an event, we had all of these, and at that time, nobody knew, you know, all the behind the scenes stuff of, you know, how we almost had it canceled because of Columbine, right. You know, the rain, all the problems that created for us. And yet, you know, it still came off, you know, and we still had people that enjoyed it and were able to experience the magic of Star Wars with other Star Wars fans. And you know, the last day we had the closing ceremonies, and Anthony brought me up on stage and talked me about everything. And, you know, my last message to everybody was, I said, thank you for being here. Thank you for putting up with the horrible weather. And I'll see you in line 2 weeks when we're all waiting to go see The Phantom Menace. And
exactly.
So, yeah, you know, I still look back at it and I remember the difficulties and the battles we faced, but I'm still glad it happened. And I'm still proud of the job we did getting around all of the obstacles that we were faced with.
And so from being someone that was at Celebration Zero and then being such a huge part of Celebration One, now it's 24 years later, we're in the lead up to the 26th Star Wars Celebration,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure. What are your feelings about the event now? I know you've gone to a lot of them since then, right?
Yeah, I have. I've been to most of them other than I think maybe a couple I haven't been to, but yeah. And It you know, I'm proud of the fact that what we started in Denver here has now carried on and continued, you know, to different cities around the country and now to different countries around the world.
Right.
So it's a sense of pride for me to know that, you know, that it all started here with me in Denver, but it's carried on and it's continued. And I'm elated that celebrations are continuing on, and I hope they keep going long after I'm gone, because it's a wonderful event for Star Wars fans of all ages. You know, you've got grandparents and parents and kids now, and who all go to these Star Wars celebrations. And Celebration 1, you know, we didn't have the 130,000 people right. that go to them, you know, here now in L.A. and such. You know, I think our total and max was like 30,000 that came to Celebration 1. So it was a, you know, if you went to Celebration 1, it was kind of like, yeah, I was at Woodstock, you know. Well, yeah, I was at Celebration 1. It's kind of that kind of a special bragging right, you know.
Yeah, and Celebration, I can speak for myself and my friends, but it's so important to us in our Star Wars lives. And it's Celebration in London, I hosted a panel, and it was like just like beyond a dream come true moment, you know. So Celebration is like, it's so important in the world of us as Star Wars fans. So it's like, it's, you were at the very heart of it. So it means a lot to us for sure.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And as I said, I take great pride that it's continuing on, and I love the fact that, you know, it's gone. It's now what it is today. It's a part of Star Wars history, and that's amazing.
Definitely. So you parted ways with the fan club, I believe in late 2000, and then Insider soon after.
That's right.
That.
That's right. Yep. Well, I sold it actually. I sold it to Wizards of the Coast.
Yes.
Okay. They took over running the fan club, but they had it pulled away from them, I believe, in 2 years after that.
Right.
And so then I think Lucasfilm closed the club down, but they wanted to keep the Insider going, so they gave the rights to do the Insider magazine to Titan Publishing in England, right. And they still are publishing that. And I still talk to them all the time. They're good friends of mine.
Oh, good. And the fan club, I know, came back in like 2003, 2004, but it was like mostly online, like a totally
that's
different.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right. It didn't carry on for very long after that, because the internet came along and Lucasfilm felt there were just too many fan sites and too much going on that the fan club wasn't as important then, because there was so much stuff on the internet that fans could get for Star Wars. And then they had StarWars.com, which really kind of took the place of the fan club. Yeah. And that's where you could find merchandise and you could find out the news about Star Wars and things. Right. So, yeah, once again, the fan club, as I did it during that period of time, it was just a moment in time, you know, and it, with the internet coming along, it changed the whole scope of things.
It did. And yeah, I guess the fan club isn't needed in the same way, but I will say Star Wars Insider is still a huge part of the fan world. And I have several friends that have written for it. And I also, one of my zines was in it a couple years back.
Awesome.
It was a huge deal. So yeah, Star Wars Insider is still a really special part of the fan community too.
That's awesome. I love it.
It's great. So how has Star Wars shown up in your life since you stopped working with Lucasfilm?
I still have friendships from that very first convention. Sure. And I'm still very much friends with people at Lucasfilm, Lynn Hale and Anthony Daniels, who I talk to all the time, and Warwick Davis and his wife, Sammy. And I still watch all the shows, and I still have them giving me Star Wars things that come out, and I get them in the mail. And so, you know, my life is still, while I'm not in an official capacity, you know, I'm still a part of all of the Star Wars universe and world. And I have so many friends I've met through the fan club and Celebration that I'm still in touch with. So yeah, it has long tendrils that still keep affecting me in many aspects of my life.
And you worked with Her Universe for a while, right?
I did. I helped Ashley launch that.
Yes.
What was it, like 14, 15 years ago? She brought me on board and I did all the marketing and PR for her. And then I worked for her for 10 years doing all of that on Her Universe until she sold it to Hot Topic, at which point then they brought it all in-house and I went on to become an independent consultant.
Cool. Yeah, that's also such a big part of Star Wars fandom now, Her Universe. It is.
I mean, she really was ahead of her time. She saw how many female fans of Star Wars there were. And, you know, today now I dare say there's, you know, it's not only 50-50, but maybe even a little more female fans than male fans now.
It's, yeah, definitely. And it's funny, like, because there have been so many Star Wars fan, female fans since 1977, but I feel like that wasn't like public knowledge until Her Universe came along, which is just, it's just a really cool way to highlight that part of fandom. And it
really is. And Ashley's become another one of my dear friends, and I talk to her all the time. So she's another one that, will be a lifelong friend.
Definitely. That's amazing. So Dan, just to wrap it up, I'm going to ask the big question. I ask this to pretty much all of my guests. What does being a Star Wars fan mean to you?
Being a Star Wars fan to me means hope and enjoyment. I love the fact that it's got a positive message behind Star Wars. And you know, for me, Star Wars means camaraderie, friendship. I can't tell you how many people I've met that met their lifetime partner because of Star Wars, or married somebody because of Star Wars, or found their best friend as a result of Star Wars. So really, in a nutshell, I would say Star Wars is about friendship, because if I think back at how many people's lives have been changed because of Star Wars, it truly is mind-boggling. And I love how many lives have been changed as a result of Star Wars. So for me, Star Wars is all about, you know, hope, enjoyment, and friendship. That's really where I see it affecting my life and others' lives the most.
I totally agree. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Dan. This has been such an honor for me.
I love it, Kara. This has been fun. I always love talking about Star Wars, so I never grow tired of that.
Thank you so much. And is there anything that you want to plug or tell anybody about or anything like that?
The only thing I have is I'm working on my memoirs now, and hopefully next year they'll be out, and I'll have a lot of stories to tell about my work, my years with Star Wars, and you know, stories and people I've come in contact with and such. So that's coming out next year. But that's really the thing. I still am doing my PR consulting and stuff work for a variety of different companies. But if it's directly with Star Wars, that's what's coming next.
Well, that is incredibly exciting, and I can't wait to read that for sure.
Awesome.
Well, thank you again so much.
All right, Kara. Well, thank you for having me on.
Into a Larger World, the podcast, created and hosted by Kara DJ and produced by me, Travis Bryant, at Forstein. Follow the show on Instagram at Into a Larger World Project and support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/IntoALargerWorld. Have a Star Wars fandom story to tell? Send an email to intoalargerworldproject@gmail.com and you could be featured on an upcoming episode. Subscribe, rate, and review everywhere you listen to podcasts. Until we meet again, may the Force be with you.